It's unlikely that Randolph Stowe ever sat down to write a biography or lay down his memoir. He chose an extremely private life in the Essex port town of Harwich and died there at the weekend, aged 74. Stowe was born in Geraldton in Western Australia in 1935, slightly younger than our Nobel Prize winning writer Patrick White. But like White, his work returned to the menacing Australian landscape, even though he spent most of his adult life in England. He settled there at the end of the 1960s and returned to Australia only briefly in 1974. Randolph Stowe won the Miles Franklin Prize in 1958 for his novel To the Islands, but he's probably best known for The Merry-Go-Round in the Sea. Considered his most autobiographical, it's a coming-of-age story set during and after the Second World War. Dennis Haskell is a poet and professor of English and Cultural Studies at the University of Western Australia and chair of the Literature Board of the Australia Council. He joins us now. Welcome to the Book Show, Dennis.
Thanks very much, Ramona.
Well, you describe Stowe as a kind of Australian Camus. Why do you say that?
Well, he's someone who's got that search for meaning in the world and uncertain that it's there for us. I think that he's someone who's a kind of existential writer in both poetry and verse, so that you could see him as, in that sense, a very modern writer. He said in one interview a long time ago, it seemed to me that maybe we are absolutely irrelevant to the purposes of the universe, but nevertheless, the universe is eternal in a way and fascinating. Anyway, it has a direction, a proceeding, which is fascinating in itself, even though perhaps it is no particular place for us. So he developed this interest in Taoism, and Taoism in some ways is kind of an Eastern version of existentialism, I think, without any sense of will involved.
Well, let's talk a little bit about his early life. Growing up in Western Australia in the late 30s and early 40s, what sort of a childhood was it?
Well, it was quite a happy childhood. His family were reasonably well off. He had relatives who had stations, you know, on the land, so he had a lot of experience there. He was growing up in Geraldton, which is a smaller town than the sort of boom place it is now. He was at primary school when the bombings of Broome and Darwin took place, so he was with other kids, you know, evacuated out to the bush and, you know, partly educated at home during that period, then returned to the primary school, started in state high school, then came down to Guildford Grammar School, Church of England School, which is a private school, and the one where, you know, graziers would send their kids and still do. He upset the timetable there by insisting on studying both agricultural science and Latin, which no kid had ever done before. Well, he was conscious that Seaforth Mackenzie had been there before, who was a poet and novelist, so, you know, two major Australian writers have gone through that school.
Well, by 1959, he'd written four books, and he was only 24. I mean, was he considered a sort of a wunderkind?
Well, he certainly was. He wrote two novels and most of a collection of poems while he was still an undergraduate at the University of Western Australia. And by a year after graduation, he'd published those two novels and the collection of the poems. The collection of poems won the Australian Literature Society Gold Medal. A year later, he published To the Islands. That also won the Australian Literature Society Gold Medal. So this is a pretty remarkable career. And I suppose if you'd looked at him then, you'd think he was someone who was going to publish about 50 novels and, you know, 30 volumes of poems. But he trailed off and sort of trailed off into silence in the end.
Well, just before he went silent, he worked on an Anglican mission in northern Australia.
Yeah,
and that experience sort of fed into To the Islands, which is one of the books of his that I have read.
Yes, he went there early on. He did bits of academic study, but kept wanting to escape academia and escape society, really, I think. So he went up, he worked as a storeman on the mission. And he had a lot of feeling for the Aboriginal people. It feeds into To the Islands and also Tourmaline, you know, a later book. He also kind of escaped and went to New Guinea and worked in the Trobriand Islands and that gave rise to the novel Visitants in the end. And he went to England initially to recover from that experience, really, because
he got malaria, didn't he?
He got malaria and had a, and also sort of had a breakdown, nervous breakdown there.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, sorry. I thought I'd lost you the breakdown. I thought we'd broken down.
He had this breakdown and he went to England to recover, to go to a different climate. And some of his forebears had come from there. And interestingly, he went back and lived in two places in England where, in the one part, his mother, firstly, where his mother's family had come from generations before, and then where his father's family had come from generations before in Harwich.
I noticed that Essex was the birthplace of one of the main characters in the merry-go-round in the sea.
That's as close to a memoir as you'd get from Stowe.
Now, what do we know about his private life? I mean, he was a lifelong bachelor, as they used to say.
Yes, look, he was gay, and and I think in a generation in which that was difficult, so he's left no family, and he lived alone.
Is that why he was always trying to sort of be quiet and leave? And was that because he felt a bit hounded?
I think that it was temperamental. He says in another interview years ago that he loved, Renaissance drama, and that lay behind a good many of the novels and poems. And when asked what he liked about it, he said, well, most of all, the language, which is understandable, but he said also the fact that the action is not socially determined, that things happen because of passions, not because of society. And his characters are sort of outside society, and which is why I think of him as that kind of Camusian, existential Taoist figure. And he kind of put himself outside society too. Even his living as an expatriate in England is a sort of spatial version of silence, I think.
Well, if the Australian landscape was one of his preoccupations, how did Stowe feel about comparisons with Patrick White?
He was at times a little bit irritated by them. I mean, I think there is a link there. And he did admire White's work, but he pointed out that he didn't read any White novels till he'd written three of his own, and that White really became a name with The Tree of Man, and that, Stowe had written two novels before that came out. So he always claimed that he'd found his own path himself. So he didn't want the sense that he was sort of following in White's footsteps. But I think that you can see a tradition, beginning with White, in which Stowe fits fairly readily, though he's less curmudgeonly a figure than White. Although he might sort of stand outside society, he's not misanthropic. He's just someone who's temperamentally given to getting away from the rest of us, I suppose.
What sort of a teacher was he? Because he taught at the University of Adelaide and lectured briefly at the University of Western Australia. What was he like?
Yeah, he taught a bit at Adelaide and he taught a bit at UWA, not for long periods. I'm told that he gave some lectures, which were in anthropology, actually, at UWA, and you had to sit in the first three rows because beyond that you wouldn't be able to hear a word he said. He was this reticent figure, even as a lecturer.
Yeah, and there were many other invitations for his return. He came back briefly in 1974, didn't he? And he got a Whitlam Fellowship.
He got a Whitlam Fellowship, came back, spent, which was for 3 years, quite a substantial sum of money, spent a few months here and then decided this wasn't for him, returned the money and went back to England. I tried to get him out here to Perth in 1993 for a conference of the Association for the Study of Australian Literature, and I went through Bill Grono, who's a good friend of his, and Bill would talk to Stowe on the phone every few weeks and did right up until the end. So Bill said, oh, people would like to get you. And Stowe said, well, what do they want? And Bill said, to hear you read, they'd like to see you. And Stowe said, what, to be gawped at? And he wouldn't come.
And you asked him to write for your literary magazine,
for Wesley. I asked him to write for Wesley. Now, Stowe was one of a number of students who started magazine called the Winthrop Review, which is a student thing, and it led on to Westerly, which was also started by students. And so he was sort of in the background of that. So he was quite... I corresponded with him a little bit at times. He was a very gracious correspondent, actually. It's years ago, and I can't remember what I asked him to write about, but he sent back a little postcard saying that, you know, he didn't have anything to say particularly, but the postcard was so interesting. I asked him if I could publish the postcard.
Did you?
We did. He agreed.
But he had...
He wasn't a nasty or sort of difficult person, but just a sort of reclusive kind of figure.
He had been doing some critical writing in recent years for the Times Literary Supplement. Sometimes you'd see Randolph Stowe as the author and you think, what?
Yes,
where does that
like
come from?
Ezra Pound or some ghost. Yes, that's right. Yeah, he didn't mix in literary circles in England. Peter Porter met him a couple of times. Peter said to me, he's a very strange man. So Peter was in London, of course, mixing with these circles. Stowe stayed out of them resolutely, but he did a lot of book reviewing, actually, at times, over a long period for the TLS.
So how did he live
he lived very simply. You know, he had few needs. He spent his, you know, last many years really just reading and going to the pub. So he didn't need a lot of income, I think, and he, you know, would have got some royalties from the books. And beyond that, I don't know, to be truthful.
Did he have a reputation in England, a literary reputation?
A bit of it, but you wouldn't say he was a really well-known figure. Mm. Certainly Australians there knew him, and so there's some knowledge of his books over there, but he didn't try to promote them, he didn't do readings, he wasn't in any literary networks. So it's quite striking, actually, I think, that there's this huge interest in him now he's died, an author who was never involved in any literary society, and who published his last book in 1984.
That was called The Suburbs of Hell.
Yes, indeed. Set in England, in a sort of fog-bound society, but really based on the Eric Cook murders in Perth many years before. It's something that Stowe had brooded over for a long, long time. He was less interested in the murders. I mean, the murders have been, because they were random killings by someone who simply shot people when they opened the door with no reason, no purpose. Tim Winton writes about it in Cloud Street and a number of others. Robert Drew wrote about it. Nick Haslack's written about it. A lot of people have. It was sort of seen as a signal moment in Perth in some ways, a turning from an innocent society to an experienced one. People lock their doors after that and so on. But Stowe, you know, The Suburbs of Hell, these random killings go on, but you never find out who the murderer was. Stowe was more interested in the atmosphere it created, in the sense of suspicion that people had of each other, a kind of alienation from each other. So his sort of Camusian kind of sense of separateness is really what the book's all about, rather than being a sort of detective story about killing.
Well, just in our last 30 seconds or so, can we talk about any legacy or impact on Australian writers of Randolph Stowe?
He's part of that Australian experience of high modernism, I think, in which you'd see White, and so there's a diffuse legacy, but there is an immediate legacy on people like Dorothy Hewitt and Tim Winton, who speaks of Stowe with great respect. So anyone who writes about the Australian landscape in that sophisticated, philosophical sort of way where it seems to talk to the Australian spirit owes something to Randolph Stowe.
Well, Dennis Haskell, thanks so much for talking to us on The Book Show today.
Thanks, Romina.
Dennis Haskell is a poet, professor of English and cultural studies at the University of Western Australia and chair of the Literature Board of the Australia Council.